when we talked about the 51 strike, you talked about that was really the point at which women began to be more visible. In the
Very country. Definitely.
Now, what happened during the 70s? When did the strike begin in 77?
77.
Mm-hmm. What happened during that strike in terms of the role of women?
Well, the role of women by that time, we had women on the executive board. In fact, Gail Powell was recruiting secretary of the executive board at that time. And we had women that were stewards, a lot of women that were stewards. And we had women that were doing insurance work and things like that. So when they came out this time, they were very assertive. They, you know, they didn't stand back, and they were good leaders. And a lot of them donated a lot of time and all that sort of thing. But their leadership was very visible.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me, very visible. We even had a gal on third shift who was in charge of transportation. And she was a planner in the shop. She was an office worker. But when we needed to head out someone, sometimes it was hard to staff your third shift.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But by golly, she took up the responsibility of that, and I'm telling you, in fact, she's a gal that's, I think she's there. Yeah. Flo Bly.
What's her name?
Flo Bly.
Oh. What kinds of problems did you have with scabbing?
We didn't the exact number. Now isn't that awful? I can't tell you the exact number. We didn't have 31. I remember in 1930, we didn't have that many even.
Mm-hmm.
We had one woman that went across the picket line, and unfortunately, I think that could have been prevented. And she didn't go right at first. She went the second week. She came up to see. She came up and she worked in the soup kitchen, and she used to be in one of my crews at one time, a DC-10, and so she was in there just working away, washing, scrubbing pots, doing everything, doing her job and everything else, and I stamped her card and everything else, and for some reason she lost it, but she came down to the hall when I was not there, and she wanted her check. You know, she'd worked, and the chairman of the finance division at the time, he said, "I'm sorry, but you don't have any evidence that you worked." She said, "Well, I worked up in that kitchen, and except, he said, "I'm sorry, you don't have it." Well, I'll see Betty Murphy. Well, she's not here right now, so she said, "Well, I have to eat, you know, I have to pay my bills." So she went home the next day, she went to the damn plant. Well, I called her at home, and I said, "Connie, I wish you hadn't done that, except. I said, "You know, I could have straightened it out for you." She said, "Basically, it was terrible the way they treated me." And so there you were. So she was in the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me there were like 7 or 8 people went in the plant. I can't exactly remember. In the plant. Now, there were some people that went into a material. We had a scab list. In fact, we may have a list in that book. I don't know. We had a scab list. We published it.
Mm-hmm. And so the plant was trying to maintain, were they maintaining any operation at all during that?
Very, very little. The supervisors were trying to do the work, just like they were, you know, in 1951. However, you see, a lot of the supervisors by 1977 had been on the clock and worked their way up, so a lot of them still had the skill. They had more than had the skill in, but supervisors were trying to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
There were very few people. No, now this time there's two big differences that I felt, okay? One, I thought they had more heart and they worked harder in 51. You know, they had more heart, okay? A lot of those people were just you know, they're ready to have their home store closed down and all that sort of thing, but they were hurting so bad and they realized something had to be done, you know, as far as organizing, getting a better contract. They wanted to go on strike, all right? This time, a lot of them, they didn't care one way or the other, and they had money in the bank, so what the hell? They take a vacation, see?
Mm.
Big difference there. Yeah, that's one. Now, two, of course, we struggled because we didn't have any money, and it was really tough. We had to go around begging with our hand out and that sort of thing. See, we hadn't established ourselves very, you know, really totally in this community and surrounding community, so we had to go out with our hand. This time, we had a strike fund, okay? And we had a lot more legal beagles from the international were down there to take care of a lot of things that we had to take care of ourselves, you know, one-on-one,
mm-hmm.
legal matters and things like that. The international provided for us this time. And there was plenty of money for strike benefits, plenty of money. So there was no problem there. And I personally think that I was a lot prouder of the one in 1951 than I was in 1977.
Mm-hmm. It was
because
just in a sense a change in the trade union movement.
A lot more professional, and they get a little too far removed from the people in the shop and from the local level. They're growing so large, you see, and they have these regions, and they have regional representatives. They want the regional representative down there. So you talk to that man. You don't want to talk to that regional director, you know, all that sort of thing. Well, this guy here, he wants to hold his job, so he wants the regional director to think that he's got control of that local down there, so he's going to play politics in that local and could ruin it. You know, it's pretty tough, see. And I'll tell you, you know, because just because of my experience, because I happened to be the right place at the right time to get this experience, you know. And I had the desire, that's for damn sure, that I did know how to, when we had a problem, I know how to get out of it. I know how, who to see, and if they didn't help, I know how to go up the ladder, okay? And so when the time came, you know, after, like I say, after working, and I did, I put long, long hours, and that's really when I found out for sure I'd never be able to work again, was during the strike.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was working, you know, 16 hours a day, and I went, I think, 5 weeks, and I didn't have a day off, you know, and I was wearing that brace and everything else, and finally, I got numb again. My legs and back went numb, and oh, my God, Don, I was in bed again. So I was in bed for about 4 or 5 days. Then I went back, and everybody was very concerned, and they said, you know, because I used to go out by myself, and I'd have the people put the stuff in my car. I can remember having them put a 100-pound sack of chili beans in the front seat of my T-Bird, you know, because there wasn't enough room in the back. I had it all full of bread. But the guys would lift things in and out. I'd do a lot of it myself, too. You can't expect. But anyhow, after that, they had people around doing everything, opening up the door, lifting this, lifting that, and I didn't have to, a lot of this heavy stuff that I do. And I even helped with other cooking, too, you know, the big pots and stuff, and that's what put me out, see? So after I was in bed for 4 or 5 days, and I come out of it all right and got up and threw a brace back on again and went back up there, then we're winding the strike down. Now, mind you,
the bargaining was being done here.
Oh, yes.
Compared to the 51 strike.
Yes, that's right. The bargaining was done here, and you'll see the bulletins in here. There's so much in here that, you know, if we had the time, and I know your time is getting very, very short, we can go, and if I went through that book, I could almost tell you, if I had to remind me certain stages of the things that happened. But a lot of it was done here. And you know, and see, I worked so closely, especially from 1 o'clock until 1 o'clock in the afternoon to 1 o'clock in the morning. I'd leave at 1 o'clock in the morning up there, and I'd go run the picket line, see how everything was, and I'd come home, you know. And so I got very close to the picket captains, and I got very, very close to the people, you know. And I got so that even though I'd see them like once a week or whatever, you know, because they only come in once a week, that is to the pickets, but the picket captains are there every day, day in and day out, rain or shine or whatever, you know. And so it was interesting. Because we're all in there tucked together, you know, see? All right, so when the time came where the International felt that they had the best they could do to offer to us, and that meant that we had to cut back, you know, on our insurance again, and we had to cut back on our insurance, but they did have a plan, a health net plan that they would offer, you know, as an alternative, but they wouldn't cover the retirees. Well, that was pretty rotten, okay? And there were some of the classification, and they wouldn't do anything about the jet program. They wouldn't, you know, that was another thing to be struck for, because the people were losing their shirts on that. Just pretty terrible. But the company did offer 30 and out. And that's something, in other words, if you're 55 years old and you have 30 years seniority, you can retire with a good pension. That's right. No, about 80%, I believe it is. But, so, it's, you know, anyway, and so it's just, we've been wanting something like that for years and years and years. They have it in the aircraft, in the automotive industry, but nowhere in the aircraft industry. So the company decided, okay, boy, we want that. We want to set a precedent in the aircraft industry. Great, you know, see. Now, see, I had 29 on the clock by that time. The rest of everything else was in supervision, but no matter. But they had to give up so damn much to get that 30 and out. And our local, they figured that this is where they want to start it right here, no matter what it costs.
The International.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them they were wrong, 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 and everything else. And so we talked about the picket line. In fact, you turn it off for a second, honey.
They were talking about the feeling. Now the strike had been going on for a while, and now they were presenting you a new contract, and you were saying that the International wanted you to go with the contract that was being presented because of the
30 now. That's right.
That you and a lot of the membership was not happy with the other parts of the contract.
Absolutely. Even those people who had a lot of seniority and who could have gone out on 30 and out.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you know, after we got that, the contract was signed, do you know in the first 2 years there were only 7 people that went out on 30 and out? Couldn't afford it because of the cost of living and everything else, and at 55 years old, it's not that great, you see. Now, in the auto industry, when they went out in 30 now, they were getting $700 to $800 a month. Well, not the people in the shop. It might be $400 a month, but then if you weren't integrated with Social Security, because you don't get your Social Security kick in at 62 or 65, you couldn't live on that. You had your home paid for, you know, there's lots of ifs, you see.
Now, and of course, the company was in favor of it.
Oh, definitely.
They could That way, the higher paid workers would be leaving, the higher in younger workers.
Absolutely.
Now tell me what happened then in terms of the acceptance of the contract. How did that meeting go? And you said
all right.
With Fraser.
Now, so what happened was that we had two meetings. Right, the first meeting we went to, the bargaining committee turned it down and everything else, and they told us exactly, they had brochures out to show us how good the 30 and out was and make it look real fancy and all that kind of stuff, you know. But the
right,
people...
International.
The international, not the local. And so the people voted, they turned it down. And boy, I'm telling you, we had token pickups out there. We had like one or two on Lakewood Boulevard and a couple around, you know. And boy, they left that state and went right over back to that picket line. And man, they manned that thing like nobody's business. And our soup kitchen never did shut down,
mm-hmm.
you know, completely, see.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we were hoping that there'd been some compromises there. But see, not being on the bargaining committee, I couldn't get quite close enough to it then. But I could sure as hell keep the people's minds open up to what to look for. So we went back. And then a week later, I can't prove this, but I know how things are done because I have done them myself. You get on the telephone, you call up key people in the department and say, now look, we know we can't do any better than this. This is the best we're going to get, and I think you better get back to work. All right? And then there's a few little articles in the newspaper that came out, you know, saying that the international thought that was the best you could, you know, get and all that sort of thing. It was a pretty good contract, et cetera, and how wonderful the 30-dot and all that stuff was. So the next week we go back, and do you know, they presented the same damn thing that we had the week before that we turned down.
They were just using the time to clock it.
They were using the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
They were using scare tactics and everything else, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So then what they did, okay, so here we're up in the stands again, and I think I got a picture here of the gal that you hear on the tape recorder here. And so we were all talking about ourselves, and when Cersei saw the same thing, Cersei, and you know, they wouldn't give you something in writing. They wouldn't give it to you so you could take it and think, look, read it over and digest it and come back the next day. And I thought, no. And by that time, they had the bargaining committee caucus to the point where they said, well, we're going to have to recommend it. And the executive board.
Mm-hmm.
Not totally did they, but enough of them to get up and say, and nobody made a minority report. Not one person made a minority report.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean about leadership? So, I'll be damned if Fraser himself said, and Jerry Ripley, this is the best we can do. So I tried to get the microphone, and they kept me away from that microphone. They kept caught this person, that person, that person, and they wouldn't let me get to the microphone. So I, the Channel 7 reporter, TV, they were down there, a lot of channels, but the people down front, they came up to see me, you know, like, what do you want? Well, we want to know why you feel the way you do about this. I said, I wasn't going to go on the air with stuff like that. I was absolutely furious to think that they were, you know, Walter Reuther's union would do something like that to these people out here. I know he'd turn over in his grave because he wouldn't do a thing like that. He would be honest with them. It might not be what you liked, but he wouldn't be flim-flamming around about it. He would be honest, you know, see? And so I had my tape recorder with me then. And so I told this gal, I said, no, I'll see you after this meeting. I said, not now. Oh, come on, I understand. They say you know. I said, no, indeed, you know. And then they took the vote this time. They took the vote, you know.
Well, did you finally get the microphone?
No, I never did. I could never get the microphone. I never could. We had a hell of a time. And there were other people who were leaders, too. There's one fellow did, and he's since then has passed away. He finally got the microphone, but he was so mad and so angry. He had a high, shrill voice. And he gets excited, like right now I'm talking fast. I get all revved up. He could hardly understand what he was saying.
Mm.
But he was a little tiny guy, and he got up in there, you know. But they really kept me away from that microphone. But then I was furious. To think that somebody can come in there and do that to our people. You know, UAW, that's not the way UAW operated. Never, 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 never.
So Fraser and Whipple got...
Oh, yes. And another vice president of the international, and then the negotiators were talking, you know, and everything else from Detroit. These very highly educated men and everything else, you know. And because, after all, they want that 30 and out. So then I was just furious. I got out of there, I got down. I couldn't get to the microphone, they hadn't fired out. So I got down, I started going up the platform. I could go up there and just chew their ass out. I was so mad I would have hit him. So then all these international lists started getting around President Fraser. So I got my tape recorder, and I turned it on. And I said, President Fraser, how can you do this? I said, last week it's the same thing that you offered us. How can you come back and ask us to buy it again, you know? Well, there's no changes in it. You don't ever bring something back unless there's a change in it. You know, even in poker you can't do that. And this is real life, you know. And he said, well, you have to go back to work sometime. I've got it on tape here. I said, well, that's wrong, you know. And so I had it on tape.
And where were you at that point?
All right, now, we took a vote. Mm-hmm. But when they took the vote, now, mind you, and this was not a secret ballot. This was a hand.
Wait a minute. Voices?
Wait. God almighty, I have to get this on again. Was hand or voice vote? One or the other. But the people were down there and said, oh, it was a hand vote. And the people were down there and said, it was a hand vote, not a voice vote. Hand vote. And my God, there were people in there who didn't even belong to the union. Then you didn't have your union card to get in there. You didn't have a secret ballot. No union card, nothing. You could have loaded that damn thing or whatever, you know. And even at a hand vote, the people right down in front. In fact, I turned around because I was, there weren't that many hands out. And they said, carried. And that was it. And when I got down to Red Fraser, I was so furious that,
And so when you finally made the statement of Fraser, was after the vote had been taken?
After the vote was taken. He was trying to get off that platform because the people were running down there. They were going to tear that thing apart, you know. And so then I made up my mind then. Let me tell you something. Boy, oh boy, this next election, I'm getting in here. I'm going to run for office, and I am going to get in there, and I'm going to do something about it. So we got together, you know. What happened is that Gail Powell, who was a recording secretary of the people in power, she left them. She withdrew from that caucus, and she formed her own caucus, which became the team.
I see. And what was the name? What was that caucus?
The team caucus. We were called the team caucus. Now, a lot of the people that they were running for, I didn't even know. A lot of young people, I didn't even know.
The people who were very unhappy about the way...
People that were very unhappy. People that were unhappy, and some of the people that, a lot of the people had never had office before. Nothing, but... The people that were on strike were so damn mad at what happened to them. All the people that come out and vote, and that's why they were so damn mad. Why, I might have had a chance to be elected that time president. I don't know, even though I hadn't been active since 1972, went in the badge. And so anyhow, I decided, okay, I didn't want to run for high office or anything like that because, you know, I knew physically I couldn't do those things. But by God, I was going to be in a position where I had a vote beside voice.
Well, tell me, baby, before you start on what happened then, was there any... talk of a legal challenge to the vote?
Oh yes. We talked about this isn't proper, you know, and we're going to appeal it and all that sort of thing. But it's really tough. It's really tough when the international wants to set a precedent, you know. And the best thing to do is to get back in there and get control of your own local,
mm-hmm.
because that they understand,
mm-hmm.
and that you can do something about.
Well, they have to see you and your local as real troublemakers.
Oh, they didn't like me at all. And Whipple. Oh, Whipple. And, you know, when we took the secret ballot thing and they came, when we took the one ballot, the first time we had a ballot vote, secret ballot, and the people were really, really upset and everything else, you know. This is something I almost forgot to tell you, which is important to show you how the people were. Okay, the first vote we had, you know, and okay, now that was a secret ballot vote. And Whipple got up and said we should accept it, too. He said we should accept it, you know. So do you know, I might even have a picture of that in there, I don't know. Do you know that the people were madder than the devil? So we took the secret ballot, and they had to move to the union hall to count the ballots, okay? So by God, do you know that the people were so angry that they came up there, and we thought they were going to tear the place apart before we even got the ballot boxes open. We had to hold them back, you know, and get people around, and all kind of. Do you know that Whipple, Gail thought that we had some threats. If Whipple shows up, we're going to kill him. And those people don't fool around. You know, they get radical. And when they're not working, when they're not like, you know, they're drinking and it's bad news. And so we want to prevent those things if we can. So we notified the sheriff department in Lakewood that we may have a real rowdy place there and we need some, you know, he's going over there. So they sent a couple of plainclothes detectives over there, the sheriff department over there, and then Dale says, Betty, would you take charge of that part? And I said, well, I'd like to just not even have him here and let Whipple take his lumps. But we can't do that. So I took him aside and I took him out in the office and I talked to him and told him, you know, that the guy you have to look for to protect if he comes in. I described him and everything else. I said, now, if he comes in, get him out of here because he's the guy that they'll be after. You know that guy come up there anyway, Whipple come up there, and I'm telling you, those people, he came in a side door, and those people just went after him. And, oh, God, the two sheriffs got a hold of him and got him out. They even had, they called the helicopter, you know, Sky Patrol, the sheriff department there, and got him out of there. They were going to tear him apart. Next time, they didn't have that vote, so they had a hand vote, and that was it, period. So then we decided, of course, then that we were going to form a caucus, and Gail Powell already started forming the caucus, and she decided then she's going to run for president. And so when they asked me, you know, if I join a caucus, yes, I will. I said, but however, who are some of these people? She said, well, a lot of them have never been active before. I said, well, hell, maybe that's just as well. We can teach them the principles, and if they care enough to be on strike, they care enough to predict a change, fine, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, so I had to take some of those people at face value. I didn't know a lot of them, okay? But at least they hadn't done anything bad. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, as it turned out, when we had the election, believe it or not, I got the top vote of the whole everybody in here. See, I got...
When was the election then? Was that in 78?
Mm-hmm.
So it was shortly after the strike? Was that all?
That's right.
And Gail got elected by a margin of almost 400 votes. And this was the team caucus, and the other caucus was what?
Mm. Isn't that terrible? United membership, I believe.
Mm.
Now, I think houses was United membership.
Now, was this the first woman elected to this local, for sure? About the region?
She was the first in the region, too. But do you know that just a month before this election, there was a woman in the South that was elected UAW. Well, Gail would have been the first UAW in the whole UAW.
And was she, now she is out as a lesbian and as a feminist. At the time, was that used against her? Was there dirty talking
about
that?
Oh, yes. Yes, but you see, yes, there was. In fact, that was the one thing that, we had to talk about. And I got on the steering committee, because they asked me to serve because of my experience. And I said yes. And that's when I confronted Gail. I didn't know. I didn't know that she was a lesbian because the only association I had with her during the strike is she came in, she was strike coordinator, and she came in for a few hours and that sort of thing and excused people from strike duty if they were sick or whatever, all that sort of thing. So I didn't know her too well, really, excepting that she didn't do anything bad either that I could see. And for me, that's a start, see?
And a clean play.
Absolutely, absolutely. And if they have a desire, And so I didn't know who she was, and it just called my attention. I said, oh, my Lord, I don't know whether it's her own business, as far as my own personal thing is concerned, but it could hurt the whole slate. We could lose the whole slate. And I said, beside that, I asked, did everybody in the caucus know that? She said, well, I don't think so, because she wasn't really out of the closet or anything like that to speak. She wasn't really. So finally, I talked to her about it. I talked very personally. I said, Gail, it's your own business. I hope I don't upset you. I said, what you do is your own business, and what I do is mine. I said, but this is something I have to talk to you about politically. I said, it's only fair to the people in the caucus that you tell them that you are a lesbian, that you're a practicing lesbian, because the opposition will just tear us apart with it. And there are ways we can handle it if you're willing to listen, So she said, yes, what do you think? I said, well, first place, you've got to consult first the steering committee. Talk to the steering committee first. And ask them if they think it's a good idea, and after first that they're all aware of it, then present it to the whole caucus, see? And tell them that is your sexual preference, and that you have no intention of flaunting it, and that you will do the best job you possibly can, and that, as you did during the strike, and that you want to be a good leader for this local union, and for all people, not, et cetera, et cetera. She agreed to it, and she did it. And you know what? The people, the steering committee bought it, and so did the caucus.
Hmm.
And so, like I told him, I told Walter, my God, I said, I support a guy that I knew smoked marijuana, but I didn't give a damn. I'd buy it for him if it would help. If the guy's honest, and he does a good job, does not, as long as it doesn't interfere with his business, and he does a good job for us, hey, no problem. I can handle it.
Quite a move, though, for that.
Oh, listen. Well, what I did, after I talked to her, and she agreed that she would do this. And I said, Gail, I don't know exactly how you're going to handle it, but it's got to be done, And I said, if you don't have the confidence of your steering committee, just stop right there. But you've got to go before the steering committee, which make it anywhere from 4 to 10 people, at that time it's 10 people. Then you got to go your whole caucus. And some of the women in there, the men I could have, but the women in there were squeezy about that, see? But But of the people that will be running in the different caucuses, better have someone like her that was not even known, and she'd just been a shop steward. She'd never, and an executive board, never been out in the open or never processed grievances very much. No union background whatsoever. They had better chance. They didn't want any of the old people, although, fortunately, I think my record was pretty clean, so I didn't have any problem. The people knew me. They knew how I'd stand, and during a strike, I'd be out there in the rain with them and everything else. I had no problem. I was the old school, you know, I was from the, but however, I had not held office for quite a few years, don't you see? So I didn't have any problem, you know.
But you decided because of your health that
I couldn't, yeah. And I knew, and during the strike, see, and this, like I say, I realized I could never go back in the shop again. See, in our contract, we have provision. You can be on 905 sick leave for 24 months, and if you can get to the point where you can be rehabilitated and be back in 24 months, you can go back in.
Mm.
And I wouldn't give up. They kept, I had nurses here, told me you'll never do it, and I wouldn't accept it, okay?